Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
We did, but honestly, I was left with more questions than answers, Tony.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
And I'm Michael Costa, comedian from The Daily Show.
Join us for season 2 of Choosing Sides F1.
Our F1 102, if you will.
And get all of the answers.
All of them? Listen to Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Volume.
Boxing with Chris Mannix is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. There is no better place to make every moment more than with FanDuel. It's got great odds and markets for the NBA, NHL, college basketball, and so much more. It has got awesome new and existing user promotions. It is unquestionably America's number one sportsbook. It's easy to use. It's safe and secure. You get your winnings fast. Now winnings are delivered in as quick as 2 hours. It's a fast turnaround. It's fun to combine multiple bets from the same game into a same game parlay. Discover the most popular SGPs each day right when you log in. If you are new, just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app to get started right now. Sign up with promo code BOXING so they know that I sent you. Promo code BOXING so they know Chris Mannix sent you their way.
This is Boxing with Chris Mannix.
Oh, somebody punch him in the face.
Anthony Joshua is a composed and ferocious finisher. Watch this.
Andy Ruiz is the heavyweight champion.
Hosted by SI's Chris Mannix.
That was my moment.
Now with interviews, analysis, and everything going on in the world of boxing.
When you have talent, you are given another chance.
Here's Chris Mannix.
And on Saturday night, Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano will meet in what is being billed as the biggest fight in women's boxing history. Taylor and Serrano are both trailblazers. This will be the first time a women's boxing match headlines Madison Square Garden. They're expecting a capacity or near capacity crowd in New York, but they are following in the footsteps of one very specific pioneer in the sport. Christy Martin is the first woman inducted into the Boxing Hall of Fame. She's regarded by many as the woman who legitimized boxing back in the 1990s. She is the author of Fighting for Survival, My Journey Through Boxing Fame, Abuse, Murder, and Resurrection. And Christy joins me here on the show. Christy, we were just talking briefly before went on the air and or started recording, and page turner is a phrase I would use for your book. Like, right off the bat, you recount the time when your husband attempted to kill you. And I want to dive into specific areas of this book. But I mean, when you're, telling this story, was it difficult to recount it in such detail that you had to do for a book?
You know, first of all, thanks for having me on with you. Ron Borges did a great job, I think, captivating and putting everything together as we talked about. And as far as sharing my story, I really think that that's why God left me here. Many the doctors and lots of other people said there's no way that really that I should have lived through what I did. Yes, it's hard, but at the same time, it's very good for me as well. I think that it's healing in some ways. I did have a counselor that told me, as long as you tell the story from like the third person, like this person up here looking down at it, you're never going to really be healed. You have to be that person that it's actually happening to. So I'm still at that point, you know, we're 11, 12, almost 12, working on 12 years later. And it's still tough. I mean, it's hard to imagine it's hard to believe that someone tried to kill you, and then someone that you trusted, at least at some point in your life, you trusted with your life, and that they tried to kill you. So it's tough. It's still tough.
When you, going back to when you first signed up for the Mean Mountaineer tournament, the tough man, tough woman tournament they had down south, what was women's boxing at that time?
To be honest with you, as far as I knew, I didn't even know that it existed. I just, for some crazy reason, I thought, I want to do this. And I guess it was just the ultimate challenge. Let me go out there and do this boxing, because I'm from Southern West Virginia. Boxing isn't big in my area, but the tough man contests were huge. It was because everybody had their fans, should I say fans or friends, following them to come to support them. And you know, you have the guys that are just barroom brawler kind of fighters, so they are tough guys. Then you have the coal miners. You have just people that used to be athletes. So all walks of life would show up to fight in these competitions. And I still don't know to this day why I thought it was a good idea to do boxing.
You know, when you look at someone like Katie Taylor, who in many ways was groomed to be a world champion, was boxing at a very early age, went to the Olympics. This was her path. Your path, wildly different, you know, whether it's growing up, as you said, in a small town in West Virginia, going to a couple of different colleges, or going transferring colleges to go to Concord down there, being a basketball player. I mean, it's almost a miracle in some ways that you even got into boxing in the first place.
It definitely was just by chance. Again, why I thought it was a good idea, why I wanted to try to do it. I don't have a good answer. I'm trying to find that answer in my mind. I'm like, why did I think that was a good idea? But I don't know why, but it sure was a fun ride. It was one hell of a ride. Went to the, in my opinion, I was definitely at the pinnacle of boxing in the 90s. And, you know, again, in my opinion and my thoughts, like the 90s was like the last really competitive, crazy good era of boxing that we've had for a while. So I came along at a good time with Don King, fighting under Mike Tyson. Showtime was like really, really, really into boxing at the time. I mean, they are now, but like that was their first real strong endeavor into boxing. So I was at a good time, for sure. You know, I fought in the Garden, got to fight all over Las Vegas. Saw a lot of the world on someone else's dime.
No question. You talked in the beginning about writing the book, maybe being good for you, maybe a little therapeutic. It seemed like, and you can tell me if I'm off here, but like you write a lot about, you know, kind of your sexuality and how being accepted was difficult, you know, where you were from and kind of fighting for that kind of acceptance. It seemed to me from reading your book that boxing was almost therapeutic for you in that way, just getting out kind of frustrations. Just that's kind of my takeaway from it. What did you feel that way?
I think so. And I don't think I really realized it at the time. But you know, in hindsight, looking back, like what did push me to fight so hard and to fight to start with anyway, but it seems like boxing was where I could be aggressive. I could be strong. I could be physical. I could be all those things and not look down on, really. I mean, it might be a little, people thought it was a little strange that a woman wants to do this, but still it was okay. It's that those things are acceptable in the boxing world. But maybe it was my little personal outlet that, I could kind of be true to me through boxing.
Mm-hmm. When Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano walk to the ring, there'll be some 18,000-20,000 fans cheering for them. Describe to me your first ring walk as a professional boxer.
Oh my. My first ring walk as a professional boxer was back in 1989 at a very small arena in Bristol, Tennessee. It seated probably maybe 1,000 people. And I'm going to guess it was like I could throw a rock easily from my dressing room into the ring. So it wasn't a long walk. It was probably full of laughs and skepticism from the crowd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seemed like from your writing that, you know, you were viewed as more of a sideshow than anything else. Nobody was really taking you seriously at that point.
At the beginning, it was that, you know, it was just like, wow, who's putting women fights? Who's doing women? What women do we know that are even fighting? So it was tough. And what I think really helped my career was that Don King just put me out there like a fighter. He didn't give me any great exceptions. He treated me just like he did all the other fighters. And we made it work. We were actually a pretty
good team. Yeah, no doubt. You also seemed to know pretty early on the value of being entertaining. Like, it wasn't about winning. It was equally as much about how you won, winning by knockout, winning over the crowd. I mean, did that come naturally to you?
I think the aggressive part came naturally to me, but I also, and that's what I tell, especially the women fighters today, but all my fighters, it's about who entertains the crowd, who puts butts in the seats. That's who's going to be talked about at the end of the night, and that's who's going to get paid. So it's that's not always right, because you can have all the talent in the world, but for whatever reason, you don't have the charisma. You don't, you know, fight fans, the majority of the fight fans want to see knockouts, but they at least want to see really solid, hard shots being landed. They want to see you trying to knock somebody out. They're not, you know, always a fan of just the great boxers. And I mean, we've seen that, like Pernell Whitaker, great boxer. Legend, great boxer, but maybe never really won over the fight fans. So you have to have that entertainment value as well. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Don King and his placement of you on his shows and the major cards was obviously huge for your career. How did you get connected with Don King?
That's another thing that happened just by chance. I was working out in a gym in Daytona Beach. A gentleman that was training fighters for him, for Don King, happened to come in the gym, and his name was Jesse Robinson. And he saw me sparring and thought, wow, well, first he asked, who is that guy? Because I had long hair at the time. I had it all tucked up under my headgear. And they started laughing at him and said, that's not a guy, that's Christy. And so he just kept watching him. And like every day that went by, we got a little more to know each other a little better. And finally he said, I'm going to take you to Don King. And you have to remember, I'm a coal miner's daughter from Southern West Virginia. And my first thought is, of course, you're going to take me to Don King. never really thinking that would happen. One day I got the phone call. DK was ready to see you. And, you know, as fast as I could, I jumped in the car from Daytona and drove to Fort Lauderdale.
When you met with him for the first time, you know, what was his plan for you? What was his message to you at that time?
You know, I that's a good question, because I don't know if he really had a plan. I don't even know why, to be honest, why he decided to sign me. I had taken a VHS tape that tells you how old I am down to show him. And he had just moved offices. His office guy didn't have everything set up, so he couldn't see the tape. It wouldn't play. So I actually got up in his office and started the shadow box. And, you know, he did the famous Don King laugh and like sign her up. So we did signed a contract that right there on the spot.
And being with him, what did that do for you? Like, did it happen right away? Did it legitimize you right away?
I think yes, right away. The first thing, I signed with him in October of 93. I fought on the first card for him in, January of 94, which happened to be the first card ever promoted at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas. That was the Chavez, Frankie Randall one show. Mm-hmm. Loaded for, I think it was four or five world title fights on the show. So here I am, you know, you're getting introduced to the world. I wasn't getting TV exposure in the United States, but I was getting all over the world on King Vision. So it didn't take long that people from other countries started to ask me for interviews. And I really could never understand. I'm like, well, people in the United States don't even know me. How can they know me? But they knew me from the King Vision feeds of all the fights.
I remember reading early on, did you have to wear like a breast protector at one point? Did they make you wear like a catcher's body armor or something?
Yeah, that happened in Bristol, Tennessee, in one of the very, very first fights. And I mean, not only was it ridiculous, but it was embarrassing. Yes, that did happen.
It's amazing that people would think that would be a thing back then, that would make any sense whatsoever.
Yeah, the sport has definitely progressed in lots of ways.
When you look back on your career, what would you say was the signature fight of your career?
Oh, of course, the fight that really kicked off women's boxing was against Deirdre Gogarty. And we were in the right place at the right time, and we put on a great fight, being under Tyson Bruno. And we were not the opening fight that night. We were like two fights or one fight between the main event, Mike Tyson, and us. So by this point, basically everybody's already settled into their seat. They're ready to watch the fights. I do hear that when we came into the ring, then we got a little bit of boos and cat calls, and some people were like, what the hell is Don King doing now? But after the first round, it was, we had won over a lot of fight fans.
Yeah. And I remember having this discussion with Katie about how she remembers that fight and how important that fight was, not just that it happened, but it was so entertaining, that it was so back and forth, the action, like the importance of the quality of that fight was just as important as that fight taking place.
Absolutely. Because what if we had been slappers? I mean, what if we had been out there or one of us would have gone out there and knocked out the other one, and it wouldn't have been that competitive, bloody battle. Wouldn't have had the same reaction from the fight fans. So like I said, that was definitely a timing thing, and we were in the right place. We were both ready to bring our very best, and I feel like we did that night. We both brought our best.
I mean, from someone that went from fighting in front of a few hundred people in Bristol, Tennessee, to fighting on that card in that event, I mean, what was that like for you?
You know, when somebody says something is, it happened, it was just really unbelievable. You and people out there really can't understand how small my little town is. Actually, I made
1 mile, right? Just 1 mile?
Yeah. I really would not accept anything but Ron Borges to go back to my hometown with me, because I told him, unless you actually go there, I can talk to you about it, I can tell you about it, but unless you actually go there and walk those streets and meet the people, you just can't understand. So he did. And he was just like, I'm really glad that I came, because now I do understand better the things that you were trying to tell me. So you go from that person, I had 86 people graduate in my high school class, to now fighting in front of live 20,000 people and hundreds of countries all around the world. It's pretty remarkable.
You know, when you, going back to your hometown makes you think of your relationship with your family. How long did it take your family to kind of accept that you were a professional boxer, to believe that it was something real?
I'm not really sure. I think my mother, you know, at first, of course, wasn't happy about it. But my dad always said, if you're going to do it, be in great shape and go out there and learn and prepare yourself. Don't go out there and get hurt. Don't go out there and embarrass yourself. So I think I did those things. They got caught up in the excitement, in the media, the press, the I guess we could say fame. They thought it was really awesome, really cool. Mm-hmm.
You're, as I said, the very first chapter of the book is you recounting when your husband at the time nearly killed you. When you look back at that experience, I mean, what do you think of? Do you think, amazed I'm alive? You know, the guy that drove by, thank God he was there to, you know, put me in his car and drive me to the hospital. What's the strongest memory for you?
It's just, the strongest memory is this point. I'm laying on the floor, bleeding. I hear my lung gurgling. I know that I'm going to die. And he shot me. I remember just looking up to the ceiling and like, it seemed like I was looking in God's eyes. And I just said, please help me get out of here. Show me a way. And it was almost immediately that the shower water turned on. And from that point on, I got up after I had been trying for hours to get up. Every time I would get up, blood would squirt out of all these holes all over me. And I got scared. And so I would lay back down. But this time, for whatever reason, I got up. I, you know, got my own car keys and thought I was going to drive myself to the hospital.
You got the wrong car keys.
I got the wrong car keys. Yeah. So I go over to my, I go to my car and I have the wrong keys and I'm like, oh shit. You know, what do I do now? So that's why I end up running to the middle of the road and basically, as I say, carjacking somebody. And thank God that Rick Cole came by, my angel, and scooped me up and took me to the hospital.
I'm sure you hear or asked all the time, why would you stay in such an abusive relationship? Why would you stay 20 years in that relationship? To people that would say that, how would you respond?
Well, unfortunately, that's what domestic violence victims, that's what we hear. You know, why did you stay? Why would you stay? Just leave. If it were that easy, we would just leave. But for 20 years, Jim told me that he would kill me if ever I left. So not only did that obviously weigh on me heavy, but the thought that he also said, I'll tell the world that you're a lesbian, I'll blackmail you with this videotapes, I'll blackmail you with that. So there was a lot of weight for me just to walk away. I mean, my boxing career was my life, and I didn't want to lose it. So I really never, even though I talked to him at times, to Jim during the boxing career, would you please give me a divorce? Of course, it would never happen. I couldn't push it at those times. I wasn't confident enough, and I didn't want to lose my career.
Mm. Yeah, and you, I mean, were you, when you were still fighting towards the very end, were you fighting for the same reasons you were at the beginning?
No, and I always said that if boxing ever becomes a job, I don't want it anymore because I loved it. I mean, I loved it, and but it did. It became a job. And I really wish when the fight was canceled with Lucia, I think that was in 2003 maybe, I should have retired at that point because I had trained as hard as I could train. I was in great shape and I was ready for that fight. There was nothing else that was going to get me as excited for that other than that fight. I mean, I had done everything else. So I should have stopped at that time. But lots of us fighters, you know, I still think, and when I wake up this morning, I was like, oh yeah, I'm going to go run. And I think I'm going to train and I'm going to do it one more time. But you know, by the time I've had a cup of coffee and I've sat here for 5 minutes doing some work, I'm like, yeah, maybe tomorrow.
So still tempted to this day to get back in the ring.
In my mind, I still want to get back in the ring, but, and I had a stroke in 2011 when I broke my hand, they put me to sleep. I had a stroke. So the doctor at that point told me, don't get hit in the head anymore. Of course, I did basically lie to the commission in California and fight Mia St. John. But that told me right there that the stroke took more out of me than I thought it did. You know, I guess I don't mean to disrespect Mia, but Mia should never beat me on my worst day and her best day. But she did. And that's when I knew I was done.
You opened the door for so many women in boxing. As we sit here now, what do you think of where women's boxing is today?
I think this particular fight, Amanda Serrano, Katie Taylor, huge. I mean, huge. $1 million paydays, fighting in the garden. That is great. But has women's boxing as a whole really grown any since the 90s? I don't think so. I don't even think there's as many really good fighters out there right now today as we had in the 90s. I'm disappointed. I really thought, you know, it would have taken off by now and be more acceptable, more promoters putting female fighters on major cards. But now we don't even have that many fights on TV, women fights.
Is that when you say it needs to take off more, is it just more visibility, more top women's fighters? How do you define that?
I think it takes more visibility because without really being seen, they're like me, you know, how do they really even know that women box for a living or as a career? So yeah, without the exposure, it's never going to grow. We can have really great women fighters, but if they're not getting exposure, they're not growing fans, they're not growing in paydays, it's going to be hard to grow the sport.
Yeah, no question. The last thing I want to ask you is, you know, we talked at the beginning about a kind of joining or you signing up for that Mean Mountaineer competition, getting the tough woman tournaments. And I recall a part, a chapter in your book where, you know, how you said you came upon that sign by chance, you know, the sign for the Mean Mountaineer competition. And you sort of wrote like, you know, if you hadn't signed up for it, you never would have, you know, become a great women's boxer, but you also never would have met your ex-husband. You never would have had to hide your sexuality for so long. As you look back now, if you could go back in time and had the choice to take one path or the other, to sign up for that competition or to go the other way, finish college, pursue more basketball, whatever the alternative would have been for you at that time, which path would you choose? Would you still do the same thing looking back on everything?
I can't imagine how I could say I wouldn't do the same path because of my boxing career. I mean, as I said, I got to see a lot of the world on somebody else's dime. And otherwise I would have been teaching school in Southern West Virginia, taking one vacation a year, probably to Florida or, you know, somewhere. And that would be it. That would be my life. Same thing, you know, every day, 7 to 3 or 4, what school days are. And I can't think that I could say, no, I would have chosen that life instead of the crazy life I've lived.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Chrissy, the book is fantastic. Fighting for Survival, My Journey Through Boxing Fame, Abuse, Murder, and Resurrection. Chrissy wrote it with Ron Borges. Great to talk to you, Chrissy. Looking forward to seeing you on Saturday, which will be an event that you helped pave the way for in many ways.
Thank you very much.
Being out there.
Thank you. Make sure you give me a shout out on Saturday. And we will have the books at the Boxing Hall of Fame in June. So everybody bring an extra $30 to buy the book. Ron Borges and I both will be there to sign it for you.
That's right. You finally get your induction. You were inducted back in 2020, but COVID shut all that down.
So finally, after all those years, you know, after all those years of waiting and dreaming and hoping that someday that women will be allowed to be in the International Boxing Hall of Fame, we'll get to have that moment.
When you got that call, were you surprised that you were inducted? I mean, what did you think?
Yeah, because, you know, part of it, I know that a lot of people, everybody has their fan, you know, they have their fans and they have their haters. And so, and this is part of Jim Martin. He had convinced me that I had much more or many more haters than fans. So, you know, I as bad as I hate to say it, I sometimes still hear his voice in my head. Lots of times I still hear his voice in my head. And I just thought those people are never going to vote for me to be into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, well, they certainly did. It's well-deserved, of course. Chrissy, great to talk to you. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
We did, but honestly, I was left with more questions than answers, Tony.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
And I'm Michael Costa, comedian from The Daily Show.
Join us for season 2 of Choosing Sides F1.
Our F1 102, if you will.
And get all of the answers.
All of them? Listen to Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Julian Edelman from Games with Names, and we're on a search to find the greatest games of all time with the players and coaches who lived in them. Ever wonder what a locker room feels like at a halftime of a Super Bowl? Or what about the after parties? We're going to dive deep into the most iconic games with the most iconic people. New episodes dropping weekly. Listen to Games with Names on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.